Let's go already!
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome
the next president of the United States, Adam Deaver.
Yes, thank you, President Obama, for that lovely intro. It is me, your once and future POTUS, Adam Deaver, returning with the POTUS podcast. And we're going to dive right in, ladies and gentlemen. State of fear. Everywhere you look these days, there is something to be scared of, right? Climate change is a pretty big one. Every other day, it seems as if there is a new existential threat to life, or at least human life, on this planet. This is why I'm kicking off my return with a book review of Michael Crichton's novel, State of Fear. I'll bring this all back to the current state of politics at the end, but for now, let's focus on the novel itself. State of Fear was published in 2004 and was a national bestseller. It reached number one on Amazon and number two on the New York Times bestseller list. Crichton was a pretty prolific author. He wrote 26 books in total and had about a dozen of those turned into movies, most notably, of course, Jurassic Park. Hopefully, if they ever reboot that, they'll stick a little closer to the original book, which had much more science in it. It was a lot darker, and they left out a lot, as they do for any book turned movie, right? And, you know, anything will be better than the last Jurassic Park. Dear God, I'll never get those 90 minutes back. But anyway, some of his other famous books include The Andromeda Strain and Westworld. You know, that's a big successful series on HBO now. Crichton was a doctor, though he never actually practiced medicine. He got an MD from Harvard, but chose to write full-time. Probably a pretty good life choice. He did die of cancer in 2008. If you're not a big reader of Crichton, it's important to note that though he is considered an author of general fiction, like you'll find his works in just the fiction section in your local bookstore, most of his novels fell heavily under sci-fi. Again, Jurassic Park, Westworld, stuff like that. The Andromeda Strain and Prey are both science fiction thrillers, but most people don't think of science fiction in those broader terms. You know, if it's not like space or aliens, stuff like that, the more fantastical stuff, people don't really consider it to be science fiction. But there's speculative science fiction that's very, very broad genre. Even something as purely sci-fi as his novel Timeline, in which a group of archaeologists travel back in time to medieval Europe, that also falls outside of the sci-fi designator simply for the way that Crichton incorporates realism into his story. How accurate this realism is obviously up for debate, you know, again, like Jurassic Park, but he always paints a very real and realistic setting. But it's not pop sci-fi, like Star Wars and Star Trek, you know, where it's much more fantastical and the lightsaber is just lightsaber, right? So that is the first thing to note from State of Fear. All the situations in the book feel extremely real and are obviously sourced from actual science, from calving a giant iceberg to using cavitating machines and explosives to create a tsunami. It all feels pretty authentic. The story device he uses to tell the narrative is much less so. Primarily, are the two characters that are government operatives? They're not, I don't know. It's never very clear what the professor and his sidekick are, really. At times, they seem to have unlimited resources to help track down these eco-terrorists. Then at other times, they just seem to be lone wolves. They depend heavily on the resources of the dead philanthropist and use his private jet throughout the novel. Now, the main character, the philanthropist's lawyer, is just sort of tagging along. If these eco-terrorists are so dangerous and seem to be on the government's radar, why the heck is the lawyer the best option to traveling around the world and getting into gunfights and getting struck by lightning? The professor has a sidekick who is kind of like the Kato type of character. He's a jack-of-all-trade ninja guy. Is he Special Forces? I don't know. We're never really told in the book. Now, if you overlook some of those more strained plot devices, the novel itself is pretty enjoyable. It's pretty good. It's fast-paced and tightly written. Crichton was a very good author in that regard. And there are some creative sequences in the book. In this one sequence, two of the characters get trapped in a room that is used to test aircraft engines against lightning strikes. It's pretty cool. there's like a giant Tesla coil in the room shooting lightning bolts into this this wing or this whatever. And the solution for the good guys, it's earned, but you really have to look past the cliche of the villains just trusting that everything will work out and not watching to see if the trap will actually kill them or not. The bad guys just peace out like some James Bond movie.
All right, guard, begin the unnecessarily slow-moving dipping mechanism. Close the tank!
Wait, aren't you even going to watch them? They could get away.
No, no, no. I'm going to leave them alone and not actually witness them dying. I'm just going to assume it all went to plan. What?
I have a gun in my room. You give me 5 seconds, I'll get it. I'll come back down here. Boom! I'll blow their brains out.
Scott, you just don't get it, do you? You don't.
But anyway, Crichton has always been a pretty popular mainstream author. No matter how intricate or realistic the science in his books are, his ultimate goal has always been to entertain, and that is well worth the read. One sequence is pretty wild. You'll be jumping over to YouTube to research barking alligators. So the cliff notes for this story revolve around a billionaire philanthropist that discovers that one of his environmental projects is actually funding a group of eco-terrorists. The terrorists plan to execute a bunch of environmental disasters that will help to highlight a big environmental conference coming up in California. They plan on creating a massive iceberg in Antarctica, a catastrophic monsoon in the Midwest, and a tsunami that is aimed at the California coast, right where the conference is happening. For the most part, the good guys are able to halt or mitigate the plans of the eco-terrorists. The events turn kind of, they fizzle out or just barely even make the news. They don't get the iceberg to break off and yada yada. There is a pretty funny moment when at the conference, one of the guys reads from his notes about one of the disasters that they were supposed to cause, and nobody updated his speech, and just kind of like, he just kind of, oh, this is old information, right? It's kind of funny. So looking at it from a enjoyable reading perspective, I'd recommend the book. I've always enjoyed Crichton for the most part. He's got a couple of misses from the books that I've read of his. But generally, his novels are tightly paced and pretty well written. It's not Jurassic Park or Andromeda Strain, but it's definitely not Airframe. Now let's talk about the meat of this book. It's hard to say what spurred Crichton to write this book. Perhaps he had a different idea of what this book would be when he started out. He does write an extended note to the reader at the end of the book, where he lays out what he believes in regard to climate change and whatnot, but he never really intimates at what point he formed these beliefs. Of course, this is where the controversy is, climate change. Just how accurate is his portrayal of what is happening in the science and in the media? Let me digress here for a moment and give you a baseline of my own beliefs and experiences on climate change before I come back to the book and we dive deeper into how State of Fear treats everything. I grew up in the time of global warming. That was the term. Environmentalism has been a thing for a long, long time. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Environmentalism has had its more militaristic waves. When it first came into the mainstream, it started out from a militaristic standpoint, i.e. the Weather Underground. It's become much more militaristic again in the last decade or so. People with their asinine protests, let's block traffic or destroy truck tires or throw soup on priceless works of art, because we just want to spread awareness. Just saying that gives me a headache, because there's nothing more vapid and fruitless than spreading awareness. Do these idiots really think that people aren't aware? That's actually the problem. We've only been too aware, and we've been too aware for years. And lo and behold, not one prediction is coming true. Not one. And this is why they changed the catchphrase global warming to climate change. It was nothing more than a marketing ploy. The Earth is not warming enough, fast enough, or even not at all. So how can you have a panic around something that isn't really happening? Well, we'll just change it to climate change, because climate change can be anything we want it to be. I have read countless articles attaching climate change to any number of silly subjects. Like, did you know that the reason we have never had contact from aliens is because of climate change? Yeah. Someone got paid to write an article that said obviously aliens haven't yet said hi because they destroyed themselves with their own bout of climate change. Yeah, journalism. Mm-hmm. So all that to say, I'm a bit of a skeptic. And please don't think I limit my skepticism to just climate change. I'm just a skeptic at heart. It's my nature. I'm not a contrarian, okay? Don't get me wrong there. I just don't take a ton of information at face value. And that doesn't mean that I don't trust the information that I'm giving. I just analyze that information. So even though I'm a skeptic at heart, let me say this. Climate change is real. Climate change is happening. Climate change is also a very natural phenomenon of our planet. It's really one of the universal constants of our planet. How much direct influence humans have over climate change, otherwise known as anthropogenic climate change, is up for extreme debate. The science of climate change is never settled. Anyone that says otherwise is trying to sell something. When you read anything purporting the dangers of man-made climate change, it is always based in a double probability. No matter if it's in the Times or some actual first-person scientific journal, everything reads like this. If this, then maybe this. The crisis of climate change is completely manufactured, pure and simple. With that said, we should absolutely do everything we can as humans to take care of ourselves and our planet. But make no mistake, folks, we are a blip on the timeline of this planet, and this planet has experienced far worse catastrophes than human beings. The Earth was here long before we were, and it will be here long after we leave. It's not the Earth we have to save, it's us, really. How we do that is anyone's guess. I've got some ideas, but for now, let me get back to the task at hand. So being a skeptic at heart, State of Fear really spoke to me from that standpoint. There's even a scene in the book where two characters are arguing about how they need to change the term to climate change to keep the propaganda going. It's very 1984. I can't remember it happening in 1984, the movie, but in the book, there's a rally in support of the never-ending war that they're always fighting. And in the middle of the rally, they just changed the name of the enemy. The speaker, the presenter at the rally, he has to say, we've never been at war with those guys. And they even like drop in new banners right there at the event. And nobody even questions it. They all just clap and, you know, down with the new enemy. But with all the anti-climate change narrative in Crichton's book, I don't really think that his ultimate goal was to discredit the science or the scientists or anything so nefarious. I think his core point is that people have an agenda. Just about every bit of information we receive every day is filtered through someone's agenda. Whether legitimate climate scientists want to admit it or not, most of them have an agenda. That agenda is to find data that supports climate change. And quickly, let me add this point to my whole digression here. When people talk about the science being settled or the general consensus, I feel wholeheartedly that the objectivity has been taken out of climate science. If you're a scientist and someone comes to you with a boatload of money and tells you to study climate change, are you going to come back 6 months later and say there isn't any climate change? Climate science, to me, seems like a field that already knows what the conclusion is. And the challenge, the study, is to find the data that supports the conclusion they've already made. And that's not how science works. You're supposed to solve for X, not predetermine what X is, then plug in the variables until you get the X you wanted. Anyway, this book really solidified my skepticism surrounding climate change. I first read this well before I went to college and started reading things like the IPCC reports or whatnot. But what the book did was really kind of direct my skepticism, like prediction models. How often have you turned on the TV to see the path of a hurricane and you see a dozen or more projected paths? Science doesn't know what it doesn't know until science discovers the things it didn't know. They once thought cancer might have been contagious. The point to all that is that climate models are under constant evolution. There might be a discovery tomorrow that forces everyone to rewrite all their models. So what, right? None of this means that we don't act to take care of our planet and our environment. I'll talk to that in a bit more in a minute, but the point here is that the climate crisis is just another weapon being used to drive policy through fear. Everywhere you turn these days, there is something new to scare the bejesus out of you. Are you over 50 and have never gotten shingles? Just listen to this crap.
Like pulsing electric shocks, sharp stabbing pains, or an intense burning sensation. What is this nightmare? It's how some people describe shingles, a painful blistering rash that can interrupt your life for weeks. Forget social events and weekend getaways. If you've had chickenpox, the virus that causes shingles is already inside of you. If you're 50 years or older, ask your doctor or pharmacist about shingles.
If you've never gotten shingles, trust me, you don't want them. They suck. And apparently, the older you get, the worse they are when you do get them. I got them when I was like 13, something like that. Ugh, it was horrible. Shingles is what happens when chickenpox tries to come back. It sucks. But it doesn't suck enough to have a commercial like what you just heard. You're not going to die, okay? It's going to suck for a couple of weeks, but you'll live. On a side note, one of my goals as president will be to ban pharmaceutical ads like we've banned cigarette ads. But again, everything you hear about these days is a crisis. Voting crisis, health crisis, poverty crisis, police brutality crisis, everything except, you know, COVID-19. Until they could at least use it against Trump and get rich off the vaccine makers. Mm-hmm. This is why I decided to restart the POTUS podcast with this book review. Everything in politics is about causing fear. It's the climate, it's a virus, it's MAGA, it's woke culture. Please don't believe for one second that I'm singling out the left. They just happen to be the ones pushing the climate crisis. If you haven't heard it, let me say it again. The only difference between the two parties is that one is elitist and doesn't care if you know it. The other is elitist and does everything they can to make you think they are not. According to the parties, we're only ever one election away from complete and total chaos. Fascism, racism, whatever your crusade is for or against, whatever it is some world-ending cataclysm. Someone from Stop Oil was even able to get into a White House press briefing and ask the press secretary a question. Do the Stop Oil people realize how damn stupid they are? Honestly. I think that some of them do, but again, activism is way easier than actually coming up with solutions to the problem. Just imagine if we stopped oil. Do these people understand how many products are produced from oil? Are we supposed to go back to harvesting whale oil to light our lamps? Because that's what they used before they started getting kerosene from, you know, oil. Anytime a politician starts talking to you about a crisis, just walk away. It's just another excuse to spend money we don't have, to take more power, or make more regulations, or just plain old virtue signaling. Just go read the Green New Deal. Now, AOC hasn't talked about it much lately, and I've talked about it before, but the Green New Deal is nothing. It's a pamphlet of virtue signaling. There is not one single tangible policy idea in it. It's just one vague idea after the next with zero thought on real world practicality. It's a joke. Every time you hear her or someone say, we need a Green New Deal, just ask them what that means. Bet you they have no idea what to do. Or how about last year, this guy in Texas that went on a thirst strike to protest the Texas law that lifted some mandates on water breaks? It's all a show. People, if you actually want to be informed, you have to go to the damn source. You have to start thinking. I know it sucks. Nobody really wants to follow politics. It's a dirty, disgusting business full of crooks and con men selling snake oil. But if something pisses you off, you have to go to the source. Like this guy protesting that bill. The bill did nothing more than lift a statewide mandate. This does not mean that people will not get water breaks for the love of all that is good and holy. What it means is that it puts the power back in the hands of the companies or even local cities to create their own regulations on water breaks. And think, do you really think that a construction company is going to deny someone a water break in 100 degree Texas weather because this bill has lifted some arbitrary mandate? Do you think that when the mandate was in place that companies only allotted the mandated water breaks? Think. God damn it. Think. What would happen if someone needed a water break and was denied? Have you ever had a heat injury? They can be lethal. Is a construction company going to risk someone passing out or even dying on the job? Now, I'm sure if you ask any modern-day socialist, they'll tell you, of course, it's easier to exploit their workers to the point of death. But for crying out loud, this is not Kuwait preparing for the World Cup. The payout for workers' comp alone would be more trouble than it's worth. And imagine if someone died. The lawsuits from the families and even the government would be numerous. If you thought that lifting that mandate would kill people, you're part of the problem. But here you have this bonehead with his little stunt on Capitol Hill. So brave. He's so brave. Yet so goddamn stupid. Now let's jump back to the climate crisis. Do your own research. Go to the sources and think. Do yourself a favor. Look up the temperature maps from just a few years ago. You might have seen a meme going around illustrating this point, but I noticed this some time ago. The color palette being used today to denote temperature is vastly different now than it was just a few years ago. I noticed this shift a few years ago when NASA released a time-lapse video of the planet tracking temperature increase in the last century. I believe the overall increase was about 1 degree Celsius, but that one single degree took the temperature color palette from a nice smooth range of greens to a violent range of reds and even whites. Like we're suddenly living on the surface of a white dwarf or something. Do I think this is some weird conspiracy by all the weather reporting sources to try to get us to panic? No. What it is the continued sensationalization of this crisis. Please note that I'm using air quotes anytime I say the word crisis. My favorite stories about climate change are the ones where ancient sites have been revealed by receding lakes or rivers. I saw this one statue in China that had been underwater for 100 years. There have been many reports in the U.S. of lakes receding to the point that villages and ancient sites dating back thousands of years have been revealed. And lo and behold, here comes the panic. Climate change will kill us all. But think about it. What you're telling me is that 1,000 years ago, people had a permanent settlement there? So is the planet returning to what it was back then, or what? Folks, they've found petroglyphs in the middle of the Saharan Desert, okay? The climate changes, people adapt, it's that simple. But the point of everything is simply to induce that perpetual state of fear. The reasoning is pretty simple. People are less rational when they act from a sense of fear. This is a fact that social scientists have studied for years, way longer than there have been studies on climate. If you're on the left, you've been sold the line that Trump and his extreme MAGA crowd will ruin us all. If he gets the White House back, it will be the end of democracy, fire and brimstone, end of days, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. But remember, before he was elected in 2016, Dems thought he was a joke. That's why they tried as hard as they did to prop him up and get him to the national election. They thought Hillary would walk all over him. Well, they were horrifically wrong, and since then they've turned him into a Russian agent and have been blatantly trying to pin any felony on him that they can. To date, he has only ever been convicted in civil court. If you're on the right, the sales pitch is the culture war, wokeism, and all those other isms that the left comes up with. Christian ideals are under attack. Christmas is under attack. Everything is under attack. The truth of the matter is that both sides don't give a rat's patootie about much other than keeping their respective jobs. And maybe the occasional insider stock deal that nets them millions of dollars. But, that's another issue. I can't think of much that, in general, the average American has to fear. Are there many, many issues to be concerned about? Absolutely. Do any of these issues warrant mindless fear and even more mindless fealty to the two current party leaders, Trump and Biden? Not only no, but hell no. You'll not hear me use the term crisis very often, but I do use it here now. The two-party system in America has driven us to a crisis of choice. Trump and Biden are two candidates both equally unfit for office. Whether it's their policies, their personalities, or their age, you don't have to dig too far before you hit a layer of disqualification. Americans should be scared that in a country of 340 million people, the parties have surrendered their fate to these two men. But what better time than for someone else to step up? There will never be a better time than for someone outside the two parties to step up. They have rigged the system, but the system has evolved beyond their control. This is why I am talking to you now. This is why I'm officially announcing myself as a candidate for President of the United States in 2024. Who am I? I'm nobody. I'm not Biden. I'm not Trump. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. If you need any more reasons to vote for me this year than that, you'll get them. Stay tuned. In the meantime, go read State of Fear and maybe go watch V for Vendetta. We have let the government and the media narrate our lives to the point of willful insanity. You feel it. You know it. The people should never live in fear of its government, but the government should always live in fear of its people. Thanks for listening. I'll be back again real soon.
Struck by lightning sounds pretty frightening, but you know the chances are so small. Stuck by a bee sting, nothing but a bee thing. Better chance you're gonna buy it at the mall. But it's a 23 or 4 to 1 that you can fall in love by the end of this song. So get up, tell the bookie, put a bet, I'm not a damn thing will go wrong. The odds are that we're